You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Maria McKinley.
And I'm Doug Storm. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, September 15, 2014.
They also, with a stroke of a pen, quite easily, can give the duties that belong to the Department of Education and give them to CeCe.
Indiana Superintendent Glenda Ritz took questions from the Bloomington Press Club this afternoon. We hear her assessment of education in Indiana coming up in today's community report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Ingrid Skoog from the Brown County Humane Society is on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for a positive change in our community. But first, your daily headlines.
Ahead of a statewide launch of the Moral Mondays movement in Indianapolis this weekend, Bloomington's Moral Monday contingent is holding a meeting this evening at 7 p.m. in Meeting Room 1B of the Monroe County Public Library. The meeting will cover the origins and history of Moral Mondays, launched last year with increasingly well-attended weekly protests against the North Carolina State Legislature. The movement is part of what is dubbed fusion politics, bringing together many activists with multiple demands for progress. Voter rights, labor issues, and education are all main talking points of the Moral Mondays movement. Tune in tomorrow at 6 p.m. when local Moral Mondays members join us on Interchange.
Indiana health officials are reporting an increase in the number of children with respiratory illnesses. The State Department of Health reports it's unclear if the illnesses are related to the enterovirus D68 infections that have been seen in surrounding states, including Missouri, Ohio, Illinois, and Kentucky. Enterovirus symptoms are similar to the common cold, and 10 million to 15 million cases are reported in the U.S. annually. EVD68 is a less common strain of the enterovirus. It can cause mild to severe respiratory illness, fever, runny nose, and body aches. To prevent infection, health officials suggest avoiding contact with others who are sick. Wash your hands frequently with soap and warm water. If you fall ill, stay home to prevent the spread of the virus.
Starting October 10, IU's Grunwald Gallery will be showcasing previously unreleased photographs from artist Robert Mapplethorpe. The exhibition, titled Robert Mapplethorpe, Photographs from the Kinsey Institute Collection, contained photographs that were gifted to the Kinsey Institute by the Robert Mapplethorpe Foundation in 2011. Foundation President Michael Stout says the Kinsey Institute was chosen based on its, quote, scholarly mission and IU's storied record of academic freedom, unquote. The exhibit will also feature lectures from visiting speakers. On October 10th, former photo critic for the New York Times and scholar Philip Gefter will present the lecture, Robert Mapplethorpe, Sam Wagstaff, and the Gay Sensibility. On October 24th, Andrew Moisey, a postdoctoral fellow at the Center for Cultural Analysis at Rutgers University, will deliver a lecture titled Robert Mapplethorpe, Pleasure and Pain. Mapplethorpe's work is famous for its provocative portrayal of the homosexual and sadomasochism culture in New York City. An exhibition of his work in 1989 was the focus of scrutiny for the allocation of federal funding for the arts. Mapplethorpe passed away in 1989 from complications due to AIDS. The Grunwald Gallery is located in the Henry Radford Hope School of Fine Arts. The exhibit will run through November 22nd.
The Monroe County Community Corrections Department could have dozens of extra clients in the coming year, but not necessarily more money to serve them. That's the result of a new state law. Tom Rhodes, the director of the department, said he's working to estimate the costs of the new probationers. The law reduces penalties for some crimes and increases jail time for others. Those convicted of level 6 felonies, which include some drug-related offenses, will no longer be sentenced to prison. Monroe County sent 141 offenders to prison for those kinds of crimes last year, according to Rhodes. He made the statement September 5th at a meeting of the county commissioners.
We, with the new law in place, are going to need to divert those folks from the Indiana Department of Correction, which means we're going to have more people to serve with community corrections. And so we're working through it and trying to figure out how we're going to deal with the increase. And we have a plan in place, and we're looking for funding from the state of Indiana to help us do that.
Community Corrections receives more than $700,000 a year from the State Department of Corrections. The state gets a direct financial benefit from that investment because Community Corrections diverts offenders from the prison system. Rhodes said the state would otherwise have to pay as much as $3.4 million to incarcerate those offenders.
Last year, we had 639 felons on home detention day reporting on an average of 94.43 days. You multiply that out, and that's over 60,000 days we diverted away from incarceration.
Rhodes says it's not yet clear exactly how many employees are needed to deal with the new participants in the program. He and Commissioner Patrick Stauffers discussed the issue.
DOC is also wanting us to try to predict what the impact will be with the new law, and we have asked for some additional positions. We don't know if we'll get them or not, so next year we'll come back and let you know.
So the General Assembly proved something that they didn't know what the outcome was going to be. Yes?
Well, and they're asking us to be...
I mean, if they're asking you, geez, what do you think is going to happen? And they already passed the legislation? Wow. That's right.
And they're going to talk about possible funding and look for the money for us this year. And so we're just trying to do our best at estimating what the impact will be, and I guess being like Karnak the Magnificent to try and come up with the totals.
Stauffers went on to further criticize the legislature, saying Monroe County is in a better position than others to deal with the dilemma.
You know, we have a very robust system in our county to not send people to DOC. And I suspect there's a whole bunch of counties that automatically in the past had sent people to DOC upon the felony conviction. They must really be squirming or pleading them down to misdemeanors or something.
Or they're going to need to get their local community supervision programs up to speed to be able to handle it.
Like I said, wow.
The new sentencing guidelines officially took effect statewide on July 1st.
The Bloomington Board of Public Works is continuing to approve food truck permits while city staff works on new rules for the vendors. The board approved a permit September 10th for a truck that will sell late-night tacos and burritos downtown. That truck will be operated by the owners of El Ranchero, which has three restaurants in the area. Board member James McNamara asked how similar operators might be treated under the new rules. Jason Carnes, the city's staff member in charge of the revisions, responded.
Part of that discussion that I personally find interesting is the breakdown between the brick-and-mortar petitioners, such as the one we're considering here tonight, versus the standalone, and I'm assuming that that'll be part of your analysis as well, how that breaks down both in our historical pattern in granting these permits, but also what our policy goals are regarding that.
As you know, we're looking at revising those ordinances,
right.
And we've been getting a lot of feedback. Actually, just a couple of weeks ago we had a meeting to process some of that feedback, and we're working on a second draft of those ordinances to present to city council. And one of the goals is to strike that balance between the food trucks and the brick and mortars.
The new rules are likely to set new restrictions on where food trucks and carts can operate. Board member Charlotte Zitlow asked about operating in residential areas. Karn said there are some problems with that.
Currently, you know, there are some public safety concerns with food trucks setting up in residential areas, you know, kids darting out in the street, obscuring the traffic.
But I'm just thinking, you know, it's kind of tangential there. The on Patterson, and we're really off the subject. I'm sorry.
Yeah, apologies to our petitioner, but we're going to seize the moment here.
Yeah, we got a chance to talk. But that's quasi-business area out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I'd have to look at the exact
Patterson
zoning on
and,
that.
You know, I was at Crescent Donut, and I thought, wow, they have suddenly this incredible new set of prospective customers. Well,
Karn said the new rules should allow food trucks to operate in more areas, even in neighborhoods where they can't sell on the street.
One of the changes we are making will make it much easier for folks to set up on private property. So while they wouldn't be allowed in a public street in a residential area, like that Crescent Donut or the gas station on the corner, they could set up in those parking lots if they have permission. So
the city council is expected to review proposed new rules later this fall. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Support for the Daily Local News comes from Smithville, a local provider of internet, phone, and TV service over a stabilized fiber optic network, serving Monroe, Greene, Owen, Lawrence, Brown, and Morgan counties. More information on Smithville's full line of services is available at 812-876-2211 or smithville.net.
Indiana Superintendent Glenda Ritz received more votes in the 2012 election than Governor Mike Pence, yet has been stymied by his administration throughout her first term. In fact, speaking to the Bloomington Press Club this afternoon, Ritz said during this upcoming legislative session, Pence could sign away the state's education budget to a new agency that he created. Her remarks and audience questions are here in today's Community Report.
We are so pleased to have you with us today, Glenda. A big press club welcome for Glenda.
Well, sorry I'm late, first of all. Hello. Recognize a few faces around here. So I'm excited to be here, and sorry I couldn't find out where you were located and was wandering around the building. But with that, I enjoy meeting with the press, so I'm going to say that right off front. Upon my election, the first thing that the General Assembly did, they did two things. They passed a bill that said I must label schools A, B, C, D, F with accountability system K-12. The second thing they did was give me the opportunity to actually redesign the standards, assessment, and accountability, the three large systems within which we operate. I am a firm believer that every test is first a test of reading. And so therein lies the first barrier with what the federal government has mandated with the pass-fail tests. We are required by federal law, No Child Left Behind, it's been 12 years now, it's 6 or 7 years past due for reauthorization, and so we are still relegated to giving those pass-fail tests on grade level. Well, when you give English language learners those types of assessments, and they haven't caught up with the reading level for their grade level, then you can expect that they're not going to be able to read the information on the test, and thus they will not pass. Every fifth grade teacher in the state of Indiana could tell you before they take the test, I-STEP test, who's not going to pass it, because they know their curriculum and they know their students. And we spend about $25 million every year giving that test. We already have the information on. We're going to have a 100-point system. It's going to be fair and transparent. And with that, I am still required, however, to assign grades. And I don't shy away from the political aspect of this. I do not believe in labeling schools A, B, C, D, F. It has absolutely nothing to do with the quality of the school or parent choice. And the reason I'm so opposed to the A, B, C, D, F is because it's labeling students. A 3.7 grade point average from an F school will never be looked at the same as a 3.7 from an A school, ever. And so students leave our schools all the time with less opportunities than other schools simply because we put a grade on the school. The thing that I was most surprised about was the governor forming his new education agency by executive order. That was a curveball to me, so to speak. I knew I was going to be in a political situation to try to get some things done, but I didn't expect that to happen. But I'm mostly worried about what we call the Center for Education and Career Innovation, CC short. I'm most concerned that this biennium, the governor is going to seek codification of that agency. And so as a result, a couple things can happen. Number one, they can take more budget items. He has to have a budget to continue to operate. And so either they're going to reinstate the line items that he already took, and have it continue its operation as is, or they can take line items from other budget areas or create a whole new line item for the new agency. But in addition, they also, with a stroke of a pen, quite easily can give the duties that belong to the Department of Education and give them to CC. And after 150 years of having the Department of Education, who is full of educators working downtown, supporting our schools, we may have an agency that is overseeing our schools that is not in the field of education. And that worries me greatly. Dropout rate is not really on the rise. We have, because you can't drop out now without having a full-fledged parent conference. When a special education student, a more severe level, can't attend school until they're age 21 or 22. But age 18, the U.S. government forces us to treat them as dropouts. So they are not within their cohort. They are dropped from their cohort and considered to be dropouts, even though they're going to complete their work at high school with an alternative type of piece. And it all goes in the statistics that way. So it's, you know, it's hard to talk about statistics when we're forced to actually do them in a very particular way.
Can you touch a little bit on the voucher program and especially how it's being measured, if it is effective or hurting public education?
Vouchers are called school choice in the state of Indiana, and I will tell you that school choice is the proper word for it, because no money exchange goes anywhere until the school selects the child. Many people think that we have parent choice. That is not what we have in the state of Indiana, because you could go and apply at a private school of your choice but not be accepted. And then there is no money that gets exchanged. It simply goes to the school when that happens. General Assembly met, and it was pretty clear in the facts that what was known as a cost savings to the state of Indiana was quickly not going to be a cost savings. I don't know if that report had any bearing on the decision making of the General Assembly, but it was the first time last year there was no expansion of school choice. This year, I reissued and updated the report. It is now costing the state $16 million. And so I know there's a lot of chatter at the General Assembly as to how we're gonna get that equalized and get that money back into the public schools. With that being said, I made a vow that I would be supplying information to inform their decision making. That's what I'm doing.
So yes. You mentioned IRED 3, and what sort of guidance is the Department of Education currently giving schools with regard to what steps they should or may do with students who do not pass IRED 3, or third grade reading test? Well, under your predecessor, it was pretty clear that those kids were expected to be retained at grade level. Have you been able to nudge that at all?
Well, actually, it's always been the position, no matter how it was communicated, that's a local decision. So, yes, they didn't pass, but it is still the local decision as to whether they move that child on or not. When they move them on to fourth grade, they still have to take the third grade I-STEP, however. So if they failed the IRED 3, they have to take it again as a fourth grader. By the way, you may not know this, we collect no reading data on students in the state of Indiana except the pass-fail IRED test at grade 3. And that doesn't even tell us where kids read at grade 3. So we have no data. We do not collect any reading data. I cannot tell you the reading levels of the students in the state of Indiana, the key indicator of success in our schools. So I hope our formative assessment is going to do just that. It should be an assessment K-10, and I'm hoping that it will actually always let us know where kids are performing. We're at 22% poverty, and with that comes great mobility of the children in the state of Indiana, moving from apartment complex to apartment complex to apartment complex to get the next free rent deal. And some of them go to 2 to 3 schools a year simply because of poverty. And so we have to have a way when they come to their new schools that you can just pull up their name, find out their reading level, and get busy. So I'm hoping that our new system is going to allow us to do that. And then I feel quite strong that there will be a comparison of the iRead 3 and the information in reading that we will now be collecting. And I hope that the iRead 3 will just go away. That's my hope. It's a very high stakes stress test for little third graders, I can tell you that. Last question.
What areas would you support liberalizing teacher licensing?
Oh boy. I voted no against the career specialist at the last meeting. If I had my druthers, we would start out with teacher prep training with teachers knowing they were going to be National Board certified in their career. That simple. We expect the best, and here's where we want you to end up. We should have thousands and thousands and thousands of National Board certified teachers in Indiana. Instead, we have 155.
Quick clarification, a lot of people in here are not teachers. The 2, 5, and 10, not tenure, but 10 years.
The 2 years is a probationary, really, for the beginning teacher, and then you get a 5-year license, and then you have opportunities with certain aspects to get a 10-year license without having, renew it every 10 years instead of every 5. All right. Thank you so much, and again, I apologize for being late.
You can hear the full conversation between Glenda Ritz and the Bloomington Press Club on our website, wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Blooming Foods Market and Deli, your locally grown co-op grocery since 1976. Blooming Foods features natural, organic, local, and fair trade food and garden items with support for small farmers, co-op producers, and local food artisans. Blooming Foods Market and Deli on 2nd and Fess at Elm Heights, on East 3rd near College Mall, West 6th near the Courthouse Square, and right up your alley at Kirkwood and Dunn.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in, and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, and make a difference. Volunteer.
This is Ingrid Skoog, longtime volunteer with Brown County Humane and Pets Alive. I got inspired to work with Brown County Humane because they have such a great record of volunteerism and success. In the last 4 years, they have reduced their intake of animals by half, which is an extraordinary statistic, and it's great to be a part of that team. One of the reasons they're successful is they partner with local pet stores like Petco and PetSmart with off-site adoption centers, and I actually coordinate the Bloomington Center, which is very rewarding because in a typical month, like last month, we adopted out 17 felines to great homes out of Petco. Brown County will go to extraordinary lengths to work with special needs animals, and we had a kitty who was diagnosed with feline leukemia, but a very low grade, and we worked for a year finding her a special home, and finally Luna got adopted, and it was heartwarming. An article that was published in the HT earlier this spring talked about, I can't remember if it was 7 or 10 million kittens euthanized every year in the United States because of lack of homes, pet overpopulation. So really addressing this root problem is so key to perhaps getting to a place where we save them all. And every pet has a place to live, and Pets Alive has been around for 10 years very successfully doing this. Working to address the overpopulation problem and then working hands-on with the animals, and Pets Alive and Brown County Humane often work together. It's such a gift to be able to serve and to know that you're making a difference, to really make concrete steps to assist a cause that you care about. I enjoy working with the animals, but I also enjoy working with the kinds of people that are drawn to animal welfare work. It's wonderful to be part of a team. I just encourage people to follow their heart. There's so many worthy organizations in our community, and there's a place for us all, and there's a need for us all. And I happen to have a passion for animals, so that's where I plug in. But I invite people to plug in wherever they're called. So thank you for listening. This is Ingrid Skoog, longtime volunteer with Brown County Humane and Pets Alive.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organizational profile and current volunteer needs at bloomingtonvolunteernetwork.org. Now here's a rundown of volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County.
For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake with three ways to show your love of animals through volunteering. Kennel support volunteers at Pets Alive assist animals before and after surgery, as well as cleaning kennels, doing laundry, scrubbing and sterilizing surgery instruments, preparing surgery packs, and general cleaning. The Brown County Humane Society can use your help caring for their adoptable cats and kittens who are showcased at the East Side Petco store in Bloomington. Just a half an hour in the morning or evening will make a big difference. Or spend a few hours of your Saturday as an event volunteer for the annual Run for the Animals fundraiser for the Monroe County Humane Association. It takes more than just the runners to make this day a success. This is a great opportunity for groups, individuals, and parent-kid volunteer teams. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Whitaker. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB, supported by Smithville, your Indiana communications company at smithville.net, and by Blooming Foods Market and Deli, your locally grown co-op grocery. Today's headlines were written by Allison Bechtish, David Murphy, Harrison Wagner, and Stephen Williamson, along with Joe Crawford for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services.
Dan Withard produced today's community report. Activate is produced by Jennifer Whitaker. Our engineer is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Joe Crawford is our managing producer. Executive producer is Allison Bechtish. For WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program, recognized among the best newscasts and breaking news coverage in 2013 by the Indiana Professional Chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. Stay tuned for Bring It On, our local forum on African American people and culture, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.